We have made my ancestor an idol of white supremacy, racism, and hate. As a pastor, it is my moral duty to speak out against racism, America's original sin.
It seemed innocuous enough. A descendant of Confederate General Robert E. Lee, who is an ordained pastor, spoke out against white supremacy at this year's Video Music Awards. So tell me, how on earth in 2017 America did that lead to the Reverend Robert Lee IV losing his job? Since it is 2017, Reverend Lee made a statement on Twitter which resonates deeply. Quote, "Someone just asked me, was it worth it? Was it worth losing everything? Unequivocally, yes." Now, with that background, it is my honor to welcome the Reverend Robert Lee IV to State of Belief Radio. Rob, I know you're speaking to us while on the go, and I thank you so much for being willing to join us today on State of Belief Radio.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
I deeply empathize with a situation where one's moral values and one's ministry turn out to no longer be compatible. What was your pastorate like for you? What did you feel about your pastorate while in it?
You love the people. You love the people with whatever's going on in their lives, and you love them. But sometimes you have to stand up for something. And when you stand up for something, sometimes it costs you something. But ultimately, for me, what is important in this narrative is not that I lost my job, but that there are people that are losing their jobs across this nation who don't have any opportunity of recourse or getting another job.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really sad state of affairs that we live in right now, and that's what I'm concerned about.
How did the tragic events in Charlottesville affect you? It must have been surreal to have so much focus on the statue of Robert E. Lee coming down.
Well, it broke my heart, to be quite honest with you, to see a statue become an idol of white supremacy. If we contextualize these statues, we realize that the statues were originally brought about around the time of the Jim Crow South and not right after the war, as some would espouse. And so I think their history is intentionally idolatrous. And it is clear to me as a Christian what you must say to idols, and that is that they must come down and they must be destroyed, or they, you know, we have to contextualize what we're doing here. And to see such violence, to see Heather Heyer die, was heartbreaking. Mm. But it also called us to action as a people and invited us into a deeper conversation about race and reconciliation within the United States of America.
Rob, did you see this coming, or did it just explode in front of you?
Well, I think it's been boiling for a while now. I think racism, I had a professor at Duke say that racism is in the water, and we've beat it so far down that it's in our drinking water now, and we're drinking it again. You know, we didn't have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission like South Africa did after apartheid. We just kind of beat it down into the water table.
Mm-hmm.
We ignored racism, and now that's coming back to bite us.
Did you address these things at that point, or had you already addressed some of these issues with your congregation?
Look, I've been engaged in this issue since Dylann Roof tragically killed those 9 people in Charleston, South Carolina, so this is not a new issue for me. What is new for me is the idea that people are trying to make this about me. This ultimately isn't about me, and that's the thing I'm trying to express. This is about persons of color who are suffering disproportionately to their white colleagues and their white brothers and sisters in this movement, especially in the church. I went to seminary at Duke. It's a fine seminary, and one of the best in the country, if I do say so myself. And Duke had this incredible opportunity for us to engage with one another in a way that we ask the tough questions of one another racially on issues of racial justice. And I wish our pastors and our pulpits would be more engaged in these issues of policy, in these issues of procedure, in engaging with the world in a way that doesn't make us seem shut off. There are so many people on social media and acting from a progressive point of view that need to be heard, and we need to uplift those voices through our platforms and through our channels and through our avenues.
Yeah. Talk briefly about how you ended up speaking at the Video Music Awards.
Gosh, I was just so lucky after being invited to go there. After my NPR interview, one of the good people at MTV reached out to me and said, gosh, we'd love to have you. So they were kind enough to bring my wife and I out to L.A., and we were able to speak there, and it was an opportunity for us to engage in a bigger pulpit, right? I mean, if you think about it that way, we're engaging with millennials who desperately need to hear the gospel of Jesus Christ, who desperately need to hear Jesus as a liberator, who desperately need to hear the story of Exodus and a way out of their current situation.
So what did you say in that venue?
Well, I spoke about finding inspiration in the movements that have sustained and given me hope in these trying times. And I think that was one of the things that was so prolific about that moment was that I engaged in a pulpit in which I believe people heard me as finding inspiration in people like Heather Heyer, who died tragically. And I've gotten to form a relationship with Susan Breaux, her mother, and her mother has been so kind to my wife and I, and really been a force of nature and a force to be reckoned with in her own right for us to help us find a way in this world.
Rob, were you expecting any kind of backlash after you spoke at the Video Music Awards?
You know, no, I didn't. I didn't expect the kind of backlash that we've received, because ultimately I didn't think that speaking up was that costly. But ultimately it is, and I've learned the hard way that we have to serve the God of the church, not the institution itself.
What is it that led you to leaving your congregation?
You know, I really can't comment on that in particular. I feel that that's an issue between me and the church, and the media has sensationalized that a little bit. But what I will say is what's important to me is that we move forward together as a people that are engaged in the issues of race and reconciliation.
This might be the most important question I can ask you, because I guarantee there are a lot of people listening right now who are in various ways exactly where you were. They know something is wrong, but they can't find the reason to make a change or to confront that something, and they're afraid of what might come next. So I just want as many people as possible to really hear you on this and know that there is life after an event like this.
Gosh, you know, we are a resurrection people. We are a people who believe in the resurrection of Jesus Christ, at least I am. And what I've found in that is that there is life after even extraordinary circumstances that take you to the heart of who you are and what you believe. And I'm not the only one in this movement. This is a movement. This is not just about one person. This is not about Robert E. Lee. This is not about Robert W. Lee. This is about a movement and a mission to make things different in our world. And that's why I'd encourage everyone, from laity to preachers, if you're sitting in the pews or standing in your pulpits, that you engage in the hard issues. It may cost a lot, but complicity will cost you even more. If you are silent at a moment like this, help will arise from another quarter, to borrow from the book of Esther. We cannot sit idly by and allow racism to allow all these phobias that we have to control us as a church and as a people.
Rob, let me ask you why. Why are there still so many Americans, including people of faith, who cling to race as an important way to feel superior, to feel validated? Because I think it's clear this comes from a deeper place than just habit or superficial prejudice. What is it going to take for people not to need validation in this ugly, ugly way?
I think what it's going to take is white preachers from white pulpits saying that racism and white privilege is a sin. I think it takes white people in white pews to say that we're not going to engage in racist acts and check our privilege when we can. We can't solve this overnight, and I don't have a magic bullet for it, but I do know that if we start by acknowledging our sin, we can seek atonement for our sin. And that ultimately is the way that leads to life.
What's ahead? What do you see unfolding in front of you?
Well, gosh, we've got a lot of good things coming our way. My wife and I are excited for our future. I'm going to be speaking in various churches across the nation throughout these next couple of months about engaging in this conversation. But I'm excited because the Spirit is still leading. If the Spirit wasn't leading, I'd be concerned. But in all of this, I've been confident of the Spirit's work in my life.
Rob, what would you say to a minister or to a layperson who says, I know what we ought to be doing. I know the imperative that is upon me to work for racial reconciliation, but I am tentative. I don't feel equipped to do this. What do you say to that person?
I don't think any prophet is ever fully equipped to engage in the work of liberation. If you look at Scripture, it's obvious to me that there are prophets that were not ready to speak up, but God called them nonetheless. Isaiah, Jeremiah, Micah, all these prophets that were called at untimely place times and unlikely places to speak up and speak out, whether that was against Babylon or against Israel. You know, I don't have the magic bullet, as I said, but what I do know is that we have a big God, and we serve a big God, and that God is engaged with us in this work towards liberation of black and brown bodies. Because ultimately for us, we have to acknowledge that they're not just bodies, they're people, and they're important to us. And so if you're tentative, my encouragement to you would be to look at the prophets. Look at what they did, how they handled themselves, because ultimately that's what I'm doing right now. I'm looking at the prophets and seeing that they spoke up at a time when they were needed most. And that's simply what I'm trying to do.
You know, we learned in the civil rights movement, and particularly in the eloquent speeches of Martin Luther King Jr., that this thing is about morality, it is about religion, but it is also about government. It is also about politics. What if you had 3 minutes with the President of the United States? What would you say about where we are right now?
I would encourage our president to engage in the deep conversations that our nation is wanting to have. I would pray for our president, as hard as that might be for some people to say, but I would pray for him as I do pray for him, because I believe in all of this, as much as we may disagree with one another, we are all inextricably bound up together on a journey towards completion. And I see it this way. You know, the African Methodist Episcopal Church is a great example for me, because for them, policy is deeply connected to the pulpit.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish white churches would be a little more like that. They would engage in the policy that leads towards healing and hope for our brown brothers and sisters, because that's ultimately what we're after.
Mm. The Reverend Robert Lee IV is a descendant of Confederate General Robert E. Lee, who unexpectedly found himself under fire for speaking out against the kind of white supremacy we're seeing manifest in communities, including faith communities across the country. He lost his congregation, but he has found his voice on a topic of critical importance to the very soul of our nation. Rob, thank you for being with us today on State of Belief Radio.
Josh, thank you so much. It was a pleasure.